Thank you. All lines are now bridged.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the TEFCA Task Force meeting today. we'll get started with a quick roll call, and then we'll hand it over to John Kansky to get us started. So I know of the members, we have John Kansky, Carolyn Peterson, Denise Webb, David McCauley, Mark Savage, Noam Arts, and Laura Kahn. Did I miss anyone? It hasn't out been yet. Okay. John, I'll turn over to you before we get started with our draft recommendations.
Thank you. Good morning or afternoon. I wanted to acknowledge that Arian remains engaged and energetic. He is dealing with some health issues, as I think many of you know, but heard from him a couple times this week, and we may not have the benefit of his brain today, but he remains engaged. So thought everyone might appreciate an update on Arian.
Thanks so much. That,
oh, absolutely.
I appreciate that.
I wanted to explain the approach that we are hoping to take today. We have gone straight to a draft transmittal letter. Don't panic. We have a lot of work to do within that letter to talk about, discuss, refine, and edit. It just seemed to skip a step or two if we went through our the ideas that we summarized and a first crack at recommendations right in the letter. So the idea of what we're going to do today is to look at this first draft, the sections that we have initial recommendations on, and then as time permits, go through as many of those as we can to capture your feedback on, hey, you're missing a recommendation, or that's not what I thought we all agreed on, or can you change that comma to a semicolon, et cetera, et cetera. Everybody, let me ask any objections to that approach or any questions about that approach?
What's the, this is David, what's the timetable on this draft and who gets, when does it get delivered, and just remind me of the flow?
Yeah, so we're presenting, and Zoe, you may be better off, or Lauren, commenting on that. I just know that we're shooting towards we have to have a draft version to present at the HITAC meeting on the 11th. Sorry. No, I got the date.
The 19th.
June 19th, thank you. And then final recommendations by July 11th.
So we would, what we'd be working on here would be an initial round that could be presented on the 19th. That's sort of so we might want to touch lightly on all the areas, or do we want to go deep on some of them and say we'll get you the rest of them later? Is it a depth first or a breadth first search here?
Yeah, I didn't have a well-defined plan other than to say that I thought we would review the areas in which we have recommendations quickly in the first, I don't know, 5 minutes or so, and then circle back and actually start with section 2.2 of the letter, skipping over 2.1 on the basis that it's the most high-level and philosophical and important. I thought based on 2.2 to the bottom is a little bit more concrete and needs more specific input. So my idea, David, was to start after overviewing the sections, start with 2.2 and see how far we could get, and then pick up where we left off tomorrow. Hadn't really contemplated trying to be high level versus low level, so I guess level.
Okay, that's fine.
So for whatever
I was just going to say, we could obviously spend a whole day on a single one of these, so you'll have to work hard to keep us moving.
I'll do my best, and good point.
This is Mark. My only thought to David's question is, if we go light and end up then once we go deep changing things, it can be a little confusing for high tech. So it may be, I mean, leave it to you and Arian to decide what level of depth at any particular point in time, but just to guard against going so light that we might change something down the road.
Well, you know what? I would say that we're going to know more in about 20 minutes of how this might go. So let's dive in and see. We might surprise ourselves. Okay. With that, do we have? I got to get my screen straight here. Are we projecting the letter now? Yes, we are. Okay, so go back up to 2.1 for a second, if you would. So I'm just going to walk the, and I believe all of you have a copy of the letter in your email if you haven't figured that out by now, but it's also projected on the screen. The first section was, if you remember, in our first call, we started with a general conversation about the value and purpose of TEFCA and its coordination with its need to work in conjunction with info blocking. That's the section that I'm suggesting we skip for the moment and circle back to. The second section, 2.2, is on applicable law and some of our discussions that we'd had about how some of the boundary conditions that were discussed in the context of HIPAA and other applicable law. We have a couple of recommendations there, some of which I guarantee are going to create some discussion. Section 3 is... was related to the definition structure and application process for QHINs. We touched on that on an earlier call, and it was my version of my recollection of the conversation was largely not controversial. So as of right now, we don't have any specific comments to go in there, but absolutely wanted to touch on that in case there was something that we missed or that the task force wanted to consider for inclusion. Section 4 is QTF, including the modalities and exchange purposes, and we have a couple of recommendations that we've captured initially from those conversations. Section 4.1 was individual access services specifically. Section 4.2 was public health. And we do not have any specific recommendations in there, but there was significant conversation about public health, and public health was used as an example a couple of times. So we wanted we kind of have a blank spot plugged in there and wanted to prompt the task force for any further discussion on public health and the need for recommendations. Section 5 is privacy, including 5.1, the meaningful choice discussion, including a couple recommendations there. 5.2, this is starting to sound more familiar because we've slept fewer times since we talked about these things. Summary of disclosures and auditable events. And then section 6 is all of the security topics. And that takes us to the end of the letter, but that includes 6.1, use of data outside the U.S., 6.2, which is controlled unclassified information, 6.3, security tagging, 6.2 again, certificate authority backup and recovery, and 6.4, so we're going to have creative use of cardinal numbers there, identity proofing and authorization. Okay, so that's your flyover of the letter. Any comments before we circle back to, I was going to suggest, applicable law 2.2 and dive in?
I think we should start with 2.1.
Okay, we certainly can.
I mean, I have a couple of comments on that one. I think that's maybe the most important space in a way.
Okay, I don't disagree. That was one of those that I agreed with your comment that we could spend an hour. So let's try 2.1. Let's not spend an hour, but I agree that it's important. Okay, so this was based on there's a little bit of background there in prose, but recommendation number one was based on our observation that TEFCA should express the broad policy aims of enabling better treatment, quality of care, and a more efficient healthcare system. My observation, I'll seed the clouds, it was that it seems like we need a couple more sentences if we expect ONC to be able to make anything useful of that. David McCauley has his hand raised.
So I agree with recommendation one, of course. That's, you know, motherhood and apple pie. My thoughts are to enumerate a little bit more. My concerns are to enumerate some other choices around recommendation. Well, around this notion of how do you incentivize adoption of TEF, the TEF. So we talked about, you know, we raised a broad question of why would existing exchanges, which are functioning reasonably well today, find any reason to join TEF? What's the motivation? Either the business motivation or the regulatory motivation or whatever. So we've got one choice there, which is that participation in the TEF may or may not influence whether you are an information blocker. And I think maybe we can craft that language a little bit, but I agree that's one of the concerns or one of the choices that ONC has to work through, ONC and CMS. But I think there's some other ones that could be considered in our recommendations, one of which would be conditions of participation. It could easily be structured so that in order to participate in Medicare, a provider has to be a member of a TEF. That's one choice where we could weigh in or weigh or not on that one. And then the third one would be federal partners, such as the VA, could require participation in the TEF if you want to participate in Veterans Choice or whatever the new one just got passed, mission, VA mission, or whatever it is that allows providers to see VA patients. So there's more to this than just information blocking for, say, recommendation 2B or 2C or something like that. Does that make sense?
I understand. You'll see in recommendation 4 under 2.2, we get into information blocking a little bit, but your point was well made. So I heard a couple of different things. I heard we should have a recommendation that ONC should consider how adoption of TEF is going to be incented and or consider what the incentives are and act accordingly. That's sort of a general version of what you said. Is that fair?
Yep.
And then more specific version would be, and we suggest the following incentives. Do we need to go that far is question number one for me.
Well, I think, none of the things that I listed are secrets, but I think they are, if the task force felt strongly about some of them, whether they were good ideas or not, we should probably weigh in on it. My guess is
sure.
We probably don't have a uniform perspective, so one could at least call them out and say considerations such as making TEF a condition of participation in federally funded healthcare, which would be CMS's decision, not ONC, obviously, federal partners' decisions to make TEF a requirement for participation in providing care paid for by the federal partners. Again, not an ONC decision, but something we could call out as a potential incentivizer. Again, maybe we don't want to go into that political space, but that's kind of what will make or break whether TEFCA works. It's not going to come down to QTF decisions and MRTCs. It's going to come down to whether there's an incentive.
Right, and how much of an incentive you need, given how the less you like the sound of jumping in the pool, the larger the incentive you need to jump in. So it's a balance between what is the regulation. I'm sorry, it's not a regulation. What does the TEFCA ecosystem entail? What does participation entail? And what incentive levers the agencies want to use? Let me also probe a little bit. Are we worried about adoption? Are we worried about enough QHINs coming forward to be QHINs, or are we worried about participants and participant members signing up and participating, or yes? And is that two different questions?
Well, this is David again. There are entities out there performing the role of QHINs and entities performing the role of the RCE today. So to me, and that's goodness, the question is whether those entities will, kind of step forward into the TEF era, or whether they'll say, we're doing okay without that. We'll just continue doing what we're doing. That's the concern, because, between Commonwealth and Care Quality, just to name two, there's a very high penetrance and growing all the time into providers. There are plenty of participants. And in the state HIEs, obviously some more successful than others, but some of them highly penetrant into their regions. Many discussions underway to connect those together via Care Quality and or Commonwealth. So it's all happening anyway. Will TEF make it happen faster and better? And if so, why? Is I guess the question I would have. I don't think this question of people are going to do it. They're doing it already. Will they do it better with TEF?
Think we should talk about each of the specific levels of participation, though. Statutorily, the participation of a network is voluntary. That might certainly change how I think it's fairly clear, at least in someone who's more of a lawyer than I am could weigh in, but it seems clear that networks are not obligated to participate. It's not supposed to interrupt their other work and so forth. And so as we're thinking about who needs to join, if the network can't be obligated to join because of the way the statute is constructed, then the levers that David is mentioning, like conditions of participation for Medicare, would be aimed more at entities like the providers who would sign up with a particular network. And I worry that some of those levers will encounter the same types of burden frustration that meaningful use has encountered historically, where providers feel like they're being measured and evaluated on something outside of their direct control, because if the network or networks that they've already been participating in for some time elect to not be a QHIN, potentially because of the expense or the chicken and egg problem of it being of limited value until others have also joined, then those providers will be in a spot where they have a potentially minimal ability to influence the entity that actually controls their ability to comply. So I would be very cautious about making a recommendation about these areas. I think that the recommendation two that we had drafted previously, I think, reflected the sentiment of the task force's earlier conversation. Adding additional recommendations, I think we'd have to think through very cautiously. I'm hesitant.
Well, it's pretty watered down. I mean, I think that, it will be forced from bottom up. That's the whole point. QHINs will meet the need, I guarantee you, whether it's current QHINs or not. If the participants said, we need this service, someone will deliver it.
Well, and Mark has his hand raised, so let me get to him in a second. I wanted to take Chair's prerogative and interject that, David, it's interesting that you say that there's organizations already doing this and then suggest that it will be easy for those organizations to keep doing it and join into this ecosystem, and I'm concerned that the ecosystem has to be defined through TEFCA in a way such that those organizations can keep doing it and continue. Hey, Mark, you're up.
Yeah, thank you. So two points. One on this particular thing, and one for you to decide where it fits in the agenda. On this, just to note that the Cures Act says, it's voluntary, but federal agencies can require it by contract and an agreement. And that is a possibility. We could make a recommendation on that. I personally think that's a good thing to lift up, that ONC should be considering that, making recommendations about that. It has the advantage, perhaps, of being less specific about what the incentive is. It just says, it sort of leaves it to each federal agency to figure out what's the best approach to it, that for its respective work, but to do it by contract. The other thing I wanted to raise, it seems to fit within this overall section. It's not just an information blocking thing, but also to align with the ONC NPRM around API access, which is something I raised on the last call, and happy to talk to that at the appropriate time. Don't want to take us off the current subject.
And I think are we capturing that? Yes, thank you. I think what I'm taking away, and there's a lot of good notes, is that either in addition to or as part of recommendation one, we need to speak to ONC's awareness of incentives to participate in TEFCA and possibly suggest or at least give examples of incentives that could be employed. Is that a fair summary?
I'm okay with that.
Incentives or requirements?
Well, it's by definition a voluntary framework, right?
Right.
Unless the framework, but the federal, as I mentioned, Cures Act, it's section 4003, does have language as appropriate, federal agencies contracting or entering into agreements with health information exchange networks may require that as each such network upgrades health information technology or trust and operational practices, such network may adopt where available the trusted exchange framework and common agreement published under blah, blah, blah. So
that's
a way to make it required for in particular situations.
Okay. I got it. Go ahead.
No, I've said enough. Go on. Go forward.
Okay. Yeah, we got so many recommendations to choose from. recommendation number two was aimed at the undeniable relationship between information blocking and TEFCA, and offering the following: TEFCA rules and requirements should demonstrate alignment with the information blocking rule. For example, key definitions such as actors and electronic health information should be the same across both rules. Therefore, the definition should be crafted in such a manner as to be rational and effective when applied in both information blocking and TEFCA context. Is that specific enough to be helpful? Do people generally agree with that? Do I need to expound on what we're trying to communicate?
This is Mark with a question. I'll just raise my hand. You call when it's appropriate.
Yep. No, you're good. You're good. You're at the top of the queue.
I did not have a chance to do the checking before this call, but I seem to recall that on individual access services, there is a place where this might apply to non-HIPAA covered entities, and I didn't go back to verify that that's the case. If that's the case, I would just want to make sure that we're not making a broad statement here that somehow was in conflict with some things in other places. And I don't have more to say because I didn't get a chance to look at it before the call. Sorry.
I think we need to deal with non-HIPAA covered entities, and I think there's some language dealing with that specifically. But I'm not seeing how I'm trying to connect how expressing that certain definitions that we expect to be. My understanding is that ONC, and perhaps they can correct me if this is not true, that the expectation is that the definition of, for example, an HIN and the definition of EHI would be the same when applied in enforcing information blocking or implementing TEFCA. That ONC, is that a fair point?
I think all I would say that's the intention for this draft. But I can't necessarily speak to what we would do on future drafts.
Okay. And I don't know that doesn't necessarily contradict our point, which is that we're suggesting that sure would be helpful if they were. And if so, you can't define actors or EHI looking through one lens or the other. You have to look at it through both. And some of this is from this is a Kansky endorsed bullet in that of having flashing back to the information blocking task force and working a lot on the definitions of actors and EHI, looking through that lens specifically, it's going to be important in the implementation of both to have some consistency, was my opinion.
So this is Mark again. I'm reading the recommendations, and I think my point is not actually relevant here. So apologies.
I think it is. It might be. I think it quickly becomes relevant.
But not here.
Yeah,
thank you.
Okay. Got it. The second bullet was that this again may sound familiar to from information blocking. Because we're now addressing it from the other side, participation in the TEFCA should not be a requirement of the information blocking regulation, but any enforcement action should give deference to TEFCA participation as a demonstrable and constructive intent against any claim that a provider or health information network knew. Or it's words to say, this is around the, it shouldn't be a requirement, nor should it be a safe harbor. But if an organization is participating in TEFCA, it should be a good argument that they're trying not to information block. That's Kansky words to say what this bullet is trying to get at. Any comments?
This is David. Why are we wishy-washy about the safe harbor concept? I'm just trying to remember
my,
the discussion.
Yeah,
that
my
we had then.
I'm trying to bring back what the discussion was, but some of my own opinion may filter in. Which is that the purpose of the information blocking regulation is to make sure nobody information blocks, and the purpose of TEFCA is to create a national framework that bridges networks, and those goals are not the same. So while participating in TEFCA will help you share information, it doesn't serve to guarantee that you won't run afoul of information blocking. Therefore, just checking the box of being in TEFCA and being a citizen in good standing under TEFCA doesn't guarantee that you won't information block. And Cynthia has her hand raised, followed by Mark. So Cynthia, you're up.
Thank you very much. Yes, this is Cynthia Fisher. Just on the information blocking and the recommendation number 2, a concern is sort of this nuance, because if an entity is actually making it difficult for, say, an innovative tech company to be able to get access on behalf of a patient to their data, you know, I'll give an example that we've been learning about is asking for 20% equity in their business and or 20% of the revenues or 20% of any revenues of entities that they might do business with, even if it's like an Uber or a Lyft. So those types of asks are so unreasonable that one could consider it information blocking. So, you know, even if they participate in TEFCA, yet the behavior is to make it so difficult that the open standardized APIs can't really be utilized by entities that could provide, you know, efficient, cost-effective, timely, and cost-reducing mobile apps. That's a problem. So I guess that's my concern and, you know, why, you know, no safe harbor and even this type of nuanced, well, if you're doing TEFCA, you're a good player and you get a gold star and you're therefore not information blocking. I think that kind of deductive reasoning doesn't play out when behaviorally, you know, one could be information blocking in different ways that makes it very difficult for broad ability for technology to innovate and have access.
So you're I'm trying to restate to make sure I understand your position. So you're saying, yeah, just because you're in TEFCA doesn't mean you're not information blocking.
Oh, exactly. And I think to give some type of protection or safe harbor or safe lane or whatever you want to call it, you know, I think just even this recommendation, you know, puts like this umbrella of, oh, you're in TEFCA, you're a good doobie. But in fact, you know, there may be other plays that are nuanced that might not be direct information blocking, but indirect information blocking that doesn't get picked up otherwise.
Yeah, acknowledging that I'm injecting my opinion as a task force member at this point, which is that what I'm trying to channel sort of the concept of negligence in legal terms is if the bar of proving that you did something wrong is negligence, you know, what can you point to that shows that you were at least trying, even if you you end up being found guilty. TEFCA would be like, hey, okay, this organization wasn't completely not trying to share data. It's just that they ran afoul of information blocking in this specific way. But at least they were in TEFCA. It's a mitigator. It's not a safe harbor. But I'm hearing that you're somewhat uncomfortable with that characterization.
Well, I'm just throwing it out as a potential slippery slope. You know, I just think it's, you know, information blocking is there because this is what is happening across the industry. And this was a piece that was about changing the game so that people had readily available access. So I just think, you know, any way that we just have accountability that, you know, allows data to flow is a good thing. And just want to make sure that the committee is sensitive to not going down a slippery slope of embracing that this is a cover.
Yep, or fair point.
And
I think this gets a little bit to David's earlier assertion that there may need to be some things that make TEFCA appeal to potential participants. Mark Savage and then David.
Yeah, so I would fall more on the side of just saying participation in TEFCA is a fact, not even saying give deference. I think in the real world, people will point to that and say, no, I didn't mean to. I was actually trying to do the right thing, and somebody will decide. But I don't think we should put our thumbs on the scales that and with the definitions that Congress and ONC are already working on. So I'd be most comfortable with just saying here, it's a relevant fact, but not saying deference, not saying mitigation, none of those things. And just just leave it. Either you are engaged in information blocking according to the definitions, or you're not.
So there shouldn't try to create any relationship between participation in TEFCA and information blocking?
We shouldn't try to suggest that participation in TEFCA proves that something that might otherwise have happened didn't actually happen. That information blocking
or
that happened is shouldn't be called information blocking anymore because you're participating in TEFCA.
I agree.
Okay. I'm fine with trying to. It may just eliminate. It may simplify the second bullet down to participation in TEFCA should not be a requirement of information blocking, nor should participation in TEFCA be a safe harbor for information blocking. Are there? And David has his hand up.
Yeah. So, thanks. I think that this discussion has reminded me of the broader argument, and that's really helpful. I appreciate the comments. It's clear that the information blocking rule is much broader than what is covered by TEFCA. So, I didn't have the notion in mind that TEFCA was a free pass. because the information blocking rule covers much more than that. But if participation in TEFCA has no bearing on whether one is considered an information blocker, then that's one more incentive removed from any reasonable expectation that large numbers of providers are going to join and participate in TEFCA. So it's a double-edged sword. If you take away the incentive, you know, many people may say, hey, all we have to do is open up a bunch of APIs and we can forget about these expensive networks. We'll just publish our APIs and we're done. We're not an information blocker because we've got all these APIs out there. There's nobody to coordinate access to them or manage MPIs and record locators. So what?
You know, you could have an unintended consequence that information blocking just turns everybody into isolated APIs. So there's a balance here. I don't know how to word it. And the laws.
Yeah, I think David.
Pretty carefully.
I think
it's a tough stuff.
I think I'm where you're at. I think there's like one more sentence. I just can't come up with the sentence, and maybe we don't get there. I'm going to make one last run at the Kansky perspective on this and see if I elicit any comments, and if not, we'll move on. The idea of this, hey, at least you're trying concept is there. Clearly, we don't want information blocking, and we want those who are information blocking actively or passively to be appropriately accountable. However, as we go forth with under the information blocking regulation once it exists, and deliver healthcare, and organizations are trying to figure out how to comply, there's going to be, you know, 99 or 999 organizations who are complying or trying to comply with the regulation for every, you know, one who is clearly going to be subject to enforcement action. So trying to encourage participation in TEFCA and suggest that anybody who is participating in TEFCA is clearly in the spirit of TEFCA trying to share information. That's all. I don't feel that strongly about it. Okay, we have David McCauley and then Mark Savage. You guys are my best customers. And then Cynthia. Okay, David, you're first.
I didn't have a new comment. I think that was residual hand raised from before.
Okay, you get one back for free. Mark, you're up.
So for actual language to try to have something, I think you could say is that participation in TEFCA is a fact to consider in any claim that a provider or health information network, blah, blah, blah. So I'm actually a little further at the, I'm seeing the editing going on here. I'm a little further at the deference.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that.
I see. Okay. So that doesn't give it any sort of legal characterization, but it as it is a fact to consider instead of being silent about it.
Fair point. Cynthia.
Yes, thank you. I just believe that we discussed earlier, I think it's a separate point. I would basically lean on just not including it as having deference to not information blocking. I think they're two separate and distinct things, and the information blocking behavior can be done in various types of ways, as we've witnessed in the consumer marketplace. So,
yeah, I think we're going to end up deleting.
I would lean against it, and then I would even say that I do think we need to, you know, even as a whole, be reflective of even sort of the protectionism that TEFCA even built in some sense. I mean, if we look at other industries like banking or retail IRI data, or you look at other industries, we don't have necessarily an overruling single entity in sort of the structure and the multiple layers that are built in this process. So, you know, I kind of look at TEFCA has, you know, several additional layers that, you know, if you look at examples of other industries, there can be a straight up, simpler, distributed approach. So I just would hate to see this utilized as giving deference for the technology that exists today. And versus, you know, an openness for perhaps even a better way for the future as we roll out. So anyway, just throw that out there, but that's where I would lean.
Okay, so we're going to say that it is not a safe harbor. We'll take a look at the latter half of that sentence, and it may not survive. Thank you. Denise, you have your hand raised.
Hi, thank you. So as I'm listening to both sides of this discussion, I can see validity on both sides. I don't think participation in TEFCA should be a requirement, and it shouldn't be a safe harbor. But I really am concerned, as you are, about incentives for entities participating in TEFCA. So it really, I think, you know, I agree that it's a balancing act, and we've got to consider both sides and come to some place in the middle. So the direction you're going with this, John, I think we'll probably take care of that.
Okay, thank you. I'm ready to move on to 2.2 if there's no objection. Okay. As part of our discussions as in a task force, applicable law as it relates to TEFCA, those of you who presented boundary conditions may have to, there was some great discussion in this regard. You may need to bring up your examples again to help us. Recommendation number 3, covered entities and business associates that already meet the appropriate obligations should not need to address additional contracting terms, unless there are specific additional terms above and beyond HIPAA. ONC should clearly state new obligation requirements that may require updates to existing agreements, as well as where meeting existing obligations for covered entities and business associates would also meet TEFCA requirements. ONC should develop a mapping process to help map existing contractual terms and conditions to TEFCA terms and conditions. It's a lot of words. I think what the intent of what we're trying to get at there is that if TEFCA can be constructed in a way that covered entities and business associates who are complying with HIPAA are address the obligations that are needed for a TEFCA, then let that be good enough. And if TEFCA requires additional obligations that goes beyond HIPAA, ONC should call those out more clearly. I guess it's a way of saying it's not clear to us whether the requirements in TEFCA go beyond HIPAA or not, and if they don't, then covered entities and business associates should be good, and if they do, then please spell them out more clearly. Did anyone else? Well, let me just shut up and listen. Noam has his hand raised. Thank you, Noam. Well, you're up.
I would just say that if what you meant was the last thing you just said, that was a much more concise way than the somewhat convoluted paragraph that's being highlighted.
Agreed.
Okay, so the intent of what I said is a good recommendation. The words we have right now, not so much. Okay.
That's not exactly what I said either. I said intent is what you said. The way you said it the second time is better than the way it's written. I have to think about whether I actually believe that's what we want to say.
Got it.
Think about that.
Okay. Yeah. Absolutely. So, David, thank you, Noam. Great point. I didn't mean to imply otherwise. David, your hand's raised.
Yeah, I'm not sure how to express my thought. I think I'm trying to, in my mind, in my head, to think through how to re-say what you said. But the way I would say it is, you know, there's many places in the agreement where the language is, as unless otherwise prohibited by existing law, .. So what we're really asking for here is clarification of where the contractual relationships created by participation in TEF go above and beyond existing requirements of HIPAA.
Let me jump in there. If we say nothing else, we're asking ONC to, hey, could you clarify whether anything in TEFCA goes beyond HIPAA, because that's not clear.
Yeah, or clarify where the minimal terms, whatever the minimum contracting terms, go beyond, require you to elevate above HIPAA and or FTC. Because it's contract at that point. It's a contract that's agreed to by your participation, essentially. It's not, they didn't change HIPAA, they didn't change FTC laws. It's layering contractual relationships that may go above.
Right, and noting that Noam has his hand raised, let me sneak in one quick comment, which is that as I think about this, this is really what this is about, is whether if I have a participation agreement that I know touches all the necessary bases for HIPAA privacy and security, and TEFCA can come out and say, okay, any covered entity that's compliant with HIPAA privacy and security is good on all these points, then I don't need to write anything new into those participation agreements, and that's super helpful. So that's part of the practical aspect of this recommendation. Noam, you're up.
Yeah, just I'm confused a bit. Don't we already know that TEFCA as proposed is pushing us beyond HIPAA? I mean, just the fact that it wants to make non-covered entities subject to HIPAA privacy and security is already pushing beyond HIPAA. Just by the fact that meaningful choice feels a little different than the current consumer access requirement in HIPAA is already pushing beyond it. And a third point I guess that I'd say is, hasn't the past whatever number of years in trying to craft participant agreements told us that unless everyone literally signs the same participant agreement, You can't just sort of wave your hands and say, well, mine sort of reads like yours, so I guess they're the same, so I guess all the terms and conditions are the same. I mean, that seems to be what you're saying. And that's not what our experience has shown us, right? Especially when the lawyers get involved.
In recommendation 4, isn't it? That's I think Noam's concerns are really valid there. But that's really in recommendation 4.
Yeah, let's dive into. Okay, so first of all, noting that Noam's point's well made, recommendation 3 is focused specifically at covered entities and business associates. So noting that organizations that aren't one of those, this recommendation wouldn't apply to. That, I know that wasn't your whole point.
And John, I'll just to piggyback on what Noam was saying, we do sort of already know that TEFCA goes above and beyond HIPAA even for covered entities and business associates, just because we require all of the exchange purposes, and we require a response to all of the exchange purposes, whereas HIPAA is only permissive right now with regard to those treatment, payment, and operations.
Okay, so it's good. Go ahead.
Well, it's a contract that a participant chooses to bind itself by, and I think what we're calling for in recommendation 3 is to clarify that that's what's happening. Here's where you are contractually going beyond what you were obligated to do under HIPAA, but it's contractual at that point.
Well,
you've signed a common agreement, right, and therefore you will agree to do these additional things.
Well, and does it help if we narrowed the comment or the recommendation to HIPAA privacy and security, meaning that, you know, a big part of what Zoe's pointing out is that it's not just treatment, payment, operations, but as we do this stuff, there's privacy and security requirements that and it may still not work because the reality may be, well, yeah, we're going beyond HIPAA. Maybe it's two recommendations. Number one, the extent to which you can define TEFCA as not requiring things beyond what HIPAA requires is going to be super helpful for industry adoption. And two, in those areas where you're going specifically beyond HIPAA, maybe clarifying that in some form that will help organizations understand and comply.
Right. I think the spirit of recommendation 3 is to say, clarify where the MRTCs would elevate your requirements beyond what you may already be matching because you're a covered entity or a BAA, or you have a BAA with a covered entity. So, you know, clarify, make it real clear where the MRTCs go beyond HIPAA.
Correct. Yeah, that was helpful.
So
thank you.
Just so it's easy for people to understand, you know, I'm agreeing to, you know, hold myself to a higher standard now or a higher set of requirements because the MRTCs are more precise and more prescriptive than HIPAA is. And Zoe's example was a great one.
Okay, so I think we've captured that. So let's move on to recommendation 4 while we're in this brain space, because I have a feeling there's going to be some opinions elicited here. So before I read it, the idea here is that so we have 21st Century Cures saying don't disrupt current networks. That's point number one. Point number two is we know that a big challenge for current networks is participation agreements that will have to be rewritten, and the extent to which they will have to be amended is an obstacle to TEFCA participation. Does anybody disagree with either of those points so far?
No, that's good.
Okay. So the idea of recommendation 4 is to try to come up with tactics to minimize that challenge on both sides of the equation. ONC wants networks to not be disrupted and wants them to participate in TEFCA, and the networks want to not have their participation agreements amended any more than necessary. Therefore, recommendation four, there's an understanding that existing HINs and HIEs will need to amend the terms and conditions of the participation agreements to sign the CA and participate in QHIN in the QHIN exchange network. And those amended terms will flow down and impact participant and participant member agreements as well. In order to minimize the disruption to existing networks, we recommend that ONC employ regulatory tactics aimed at accepting terms and conditions in existing agreements whenever possible. I suspect we're probably reasonably okay up to that point. Now, here we go. Tactics could include a grandfather clause whereby existing networks already under operation would not need to revise their terms and conditions to avoid disruption to core operations. I guess I struggled with the fact that I know that that tactic, that there'd be things that that, for example, exchange purposes that if they're not in the current agreement, then, well, you're going to have to amend it. Point number two, empower the RCE to evaluate and approve a QHIN candidate's existing participation agreement with or without modification. So in other words, the RCE would have the authority to look at a QHIN existing network and say, hey, you know what? Your participation agreement is close enough on these 9 points that you don't need to amend it. You only need to amend it on 10, 11, and 12. And then the second half of that sentence is, in turn, empower QHINs with authority to evaluate and approve existing participant agreements with support from the RCE and a process to appeal to the RCE. So the idea there was that there would be the QHINs would be able to do similarly evaluate participant agreements and approve them, you know, kind of with line item veto, if you will. The RCE would be able to help them interpret if there was questions about, hey, do you think this is good enough or not? And any participant that was like, hey, they didn't accept my blah, 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 and we think that clause is fine, could appeal to the RCE, admitting that that process is completely hypothetical. And then the third bullet was designating TEFCA terms and conditions as required and addressable, channeling that from, for example, HIPAA security that has required and addressable implementation specifications. Okay, have a couple hands already. David, you are first up.
Yeah, unfortunately, except in quantum spaces, you can't be both dead and alive at the same time. So I'm guessing that this would have to be cast in some kind of phased adoption, whereby maybe the RCE could approve for temporary use existing contracts or existing agreements with a notion of phasing in the more demanding requirements over a period of time. So it doesn't have to be all or none, but you'd have to have some, you know, said, by such and such a date, you must have updated your contracts to the following concerns. And then by such and such a date, this additional set of concerns would be required of you. That might be an approach that could work, but eventually everybody has to be on the same agreement or it just won't work as per Noam's earlier point.
Yeah, that's when he was saying that I was thinking ahead to this recommendation. And it admittedly, there's a little bit of fuzzy logic going on here. On the one hand, you don't want to be in the situation of having to rewrite and resign, you know, 300 participation agreements to move a semicolon. On the other hand, if that semicolon is in a really important place, and that's your point and Noam's point, is that you know, you can't not have the same agreement. Is that
I'm thinking more like
alive.
More along the lines of, say, take something like individual access services. There may be existing networks
that can share patient data amongst providers but are not yet contractually amongst their members able to do individual access services. Would you exclude them from TEFCA until such time as they can participate in individual access, or would you allow them to participate with a subset of services under their agreement that by a certain date they would add the missing services? I could see the latter being a smart bootstrapping approach.
Right. I think that's a great way to incent participation in the network is to say, okay, you're in, but you have 24 months or 18 months to meet the following, or you're not in anymore.
It is
a version of what you just said. And Noam has his hand raised, but let me prompt the rest of the task force to say, if you don't like these, and these are just tactics could include, okay, so we're saying to ONC, hey, think about stuff like this. Are there better or other tactics we could put on that list that accomplish the same thing? So I'll let that dangle out there. Noam, your comment is next.
I may have a good compromise to suggest. I'm not actually all that uncomfortable with the second bulletin point about empowering the RCE, because I think, frankly, at the end of the day, they're not going to be able to do it. it's the grandfather clause part who decides which clauses get grandfathered? I think if you struck the first bullet point and just left it up to the RCE, if they feel they can be true to TEFCA and approve someone's existing participation agreement, I trust them to do that. I don't think they'll be able to, frankly, once lawyers get involved. But if there's a principle that we want to make here of sort of trying to make this a little easier, I can sort of see that. So I would suggest that we strike the first bullet point about grandfathering. I think that that can be accomplished by the second bullet point by the RCE. In other words, someone's got to approve, whose clause is getting grandfathered.
Or maybe bootstrapping is a better thought there than grandfathering. Grandfathering sort of implies that you can continue to exercise what you did in the past, whereas what we're talking about here is bootstrapping, where you can participate even though you're not fully there yet, but we've got a timetable to get you there. I don't know. Maybe it's a subtle difference, but.
No, I think that's an important difference. Is Noam, how would you feel about that first bullet if it wasn't the first bullet, but it was a version that said, okay, someone, probably the RCE, is going to have the authority to accept the current agreement that your network comes in on. But having negotiated or specified a period of time before you're all in or fully compliant.
I think that's what the second bullet says. About empower the RCE to evaluate and approve a QHIN candidate's existing participation agreement.
Okay. Okay, so I guess what I'm really suggesting is just including, maybe in a separate bullet, the concept of this what David's calling bootstrapping, which is sort of a over time become compliant with.
I'm not uncomfortable with that. I would also, I guess, point out another sort of subtlety here. That second bullet is talking about QHINs. The little introductory paragraph in recommendation 4 is talking about participants.
Well, the second half of the second bullet tries to extend that same concept to participants, which is arguably harder.
Oh yeah, I see. Okay. Yeah.
But it's not the whole thing that I think again Kansky's opinion. I think anything that we can do to that. Look, the RCE's job is going to be hard enough, but I also think we want broad participation in TEFCA, and we want. The RCE is probably going to want a certain amount of flexibility to be successful. And so I'm trying to suggest to the ONC tactics that would create a process that's in the interest of both of those things. Let the RCE have some authority to flex a little bit if it means that they can bring in an entire network's worth of participants without major contract amendment. That's all.
To jump in on the tail of that comment, maybe pick up, I have to go back and reread it, but there was the cohort notion in the draft that was, I think, designed to address this kind of bootstrapping thing. So maybe the cohorts could have the requirements modified such that, you know, early cohorts could participate quickly with the expectation that later on they have to meet a broader set of requirements. So do the staging of requirements in conjunction with that cohort process.
So are you suggesting, I want to make sure I understand your point, that you could put those whose agreements are already good to go or able to amend them appropriately in cohort one, and if you need more time, you go in cohort two?
Yeah, and the expectation in cohort one is that at some point in time, you have to meet additional requirements. I'm just trying to leverage that they already thought through this cohort notion, and maybe that's the
right
way they could deal with sort of an escalating set of minimum required conditions. It's a minimum floor that continues to rise.
Okay. No, that makes sense. Are we okay to move on to, ironically, we just brought up cohorts, so it's a good segue. Just noting that under the definition structure and application process for QHINs, we did not have any recommendations yet. Is that still the case? Just asking the task force if we've missed something in that category. Again, just to prompt people's memories, this is incorporates QHIN eligibility, which has been changed from TEF 1 and broadened. It also includes the process of candidate QHINs and cohorts. Again, I'm just poking your brains to see if that elicits any feedback. Okay, no problem. We will do not at this point appear to have any recommendations in that category, and that's fine. Let's move on to the QTF, this is number four, the QTF exchange modalities and exchange purposes. Let's see, let me put this in RAM. I'm just reading recommendation five as you may be as well. Yeah, is this the this is trying to incorporate the encouraging ONC to communicate the what it wants to see and not so much the how it should be done, which I think channeling ONC, and I guess they could speak for themselves, this is the direction that was they moved in between TEF 1 and TEF 2. So are we saying that they should continue in that direction farther still, or what would we recommend? David, you have your hand up.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a broad space here. I think the notion that you shouldn't have to necessarily do everything to be a participant is a reasonable recommendation. I mean, I don't know. It's tricky because you need some minimum maybe that everyone needs to meet, and otherwise there's no purpose in it. But I'm concerned, for example, still about the directed messaging, the push message service, which just makes little sense to me given the existence of direct. Maybe if you told a queue in, you don't have to do that if you don't think it adds any value. I don't know. I need to think more about it. I'm sorry, I don't have a great.
Yeah, no, no. I'm struggling similarly. But to clarify, your statement was participants maybe shouldn't have to do everything, and you use the example of a modality as opposed to an exchange purpose. Is that a division that you make in your head? I mean, do we think all participants should have to do all exchange purposes, but not necessarily all modalities, or is that that's something we need to think more about?
Yeah, you're good catch. I was thinking of them kind of fused together, but they're not. I think the modalities is one concern for sure, but the purposes is probably more important. So, for example, we talked about the health record bank style QHIN, which exercises individual access to go fetch and build an integrated record, perhaps in a disease-specific manner. They would want to participate to be able to share that record with the rest of the network, but they aren't able to do some of the other things that might be required. So that should be allowed, I think, that kind of a specialized QHIN. By permitted purposes. They're doing a subset of the purposes. Maybe that's covered in a different recommendation. But that's probably more important than the modality question. Does that make sense? Did I say that in a sensible way?
I think we've captured it. So my assumption, this is, and I don't want to cut off Mark, who has his hand patiently raised. So let me hold my comment and let's go to Mark.
So this is a trusted exchange framework that is supposed to provide, you know, broad network connectivity, interoperability for the nation, and I'm having a little bit of difficulty thinking through. What saying you don't have to do everything, or looking at the way things sometimes work, it's more of a pick and choose option, and how that lines up. I'd be, at the very least, I'd be interested in more discussion about how allowing somebody to say, I'm signing up for a piece of the floor, not all of the floor, is consistent with the overall goal here. It makes more sense to me that we're trying to build something and ONC has laid out the six exchange purposes and the three modalities because that's what we need.
Maybe
I'm misunderstanding something.
Let me jump in there for
a point. Yeah.
Well, no, it's absolutely a valid point, but I'm going to take off my co-chair's hat and I'm going to put on my task force member hat and I'm going to argue my side of this one, which is we go back to it depends whether one is viewing TEFCA as, gosh darn it, we don't have good interoperability in this country, so we're just going to define an ecosystem and we're going to tell the world what the floor is and everybody's going to do it, or whether we view this as what, and I don't want to put this on David, but back when we were talking at the very beginning, it's like, well, hey, there's organizations that are already doing this. We just want to make sure that they can do it within this structure and therefore accelerate it or move the country in the right direction. So if we're trying to, and it's not a regulation, so if we were writing a regulation that says, let's define the floor of interoperability, like HIPAA is a floor for privacy and security, and let's say nobody in the country can be below this floor, that would be one thing. But we're trying to write a voluntary framework, again, this is Kansky's opinion, a voluntary framework that is going to be something organizations are going to see value in participating in and not are clubbed into participating in only if the federal government gets out all of its levers. That's my opinion. End of paragraph. Okay, Mark and then David.
So I sort of see looking back at the language in the Cures Act, Congress defined interoperability. It laid out TEFCA as and directed that it be TEFCA be established as one way to support that national need. So I think there's more oomph behind it than just saying it's a voluntary framework. And I think I'm still where I was earlier, which is these are the basic needs for the nation, and what I would add to as a factual example to illustrate my concern, if everybody said, oh, thanks, I get to choose, I'm only going to do treatment, and nobody's doing public health, and nobody's doing some of the other things, that's a problem. And we have to design something that actually meets the needs of all.
Well, and admittedly, as written, it does not allow pick and choose. All participants and all participant members have to sign in for all exchange purposes. Let me stop for a moment to let ONC contradict me if that's wrong.
It's not wrong. You have to be able to support responding to all of the exchange purposes. You do not have to initiate an exchange purpose.
You're not obligated to. Okay, got it. Good clarification. So, and there's no recommendation in here that says otherwise, to your point, Mark. And I'll say it this way, even if I'm of the opinion that you would get more adoption if you incorporate that flexibility, I understand your point and why you wouldn't. And therefore, that gets to a little bit of the first point or the recommendation we need to wordsmith a bit about encouraging ONC to realize that there's going to have to be how participant members and QHINs are incented to participate in TEFCA needs to be a consideration. Carrots and sticks. David, your hand is raised.
So I have my proposal would be to rethink it along the lines of use cases that the RCE could craft, you know, subject to ONC approval, if that's how that's structured, that draw from these permitted purposes, but which address real-world business needs that sufficient number of stakeholders in the RCE are willing to commit to adopting. So that's how it works in Commonwealth and care quality today. New use cases are proposed. They're vetted by the members, and the members either agree to support them or not. And if a sufficient number of members agree to support them, they become an active use case, and members then go and implement the technology. So you could, for example, have a health record bank use case that works the way I described an entity leveraging the fundamental right of individual access to assemble a record on behalf of a patient and then serve it back up. But they would not be expected, because their use case doesn't include it, to respond to queries for payment and treatment or payment or any of the other modalities. You could imagine,
David,
a second use case that was. Go ahead.
Are you suggesting that the RCE would have the authority to apply that to the current proposed exchange purposes and phase them in over time? Or are you suggesting that would be how they would build use cases upon the exchange purposes that we start with, as defined under TEFCA? Did that question make sense?
I'm thinking this out as I say it, so bear with me if it makes.
Are you okay with the exchange purposes as a starting point, or are you suggesting we need to give the RCE authority to phase in those exchange purposes? That's a better way.
I'm suggesting define use cases on top of those exchange purposes that allow for that phasing in. And
okay,
also
so use case is sort of a certain subset of an exchange purpose.
Yeah, it's actually a combination of exchange purposes to achieve a business goal, a market-friendly business goal. So, and here, let me just give you a second example that'll maybe clarify a little bit. So, public health has the interest in being able to query for records, but may not have the resources to be able to respond for queries. So you could define a use case that says that's okay, and maybe in some future date there's a new use case that says the public health entities would participate bilaterally in querying for extended patient records, but also serving up their immunization data if they have it. So I'm just saying that the existing permitted purposes are too broad and ill-focused, and making everybody have to do them all will be prohibitive for a voluntary network. And I think shift to the use case focus on top of those.
Got it. I'm writing that down, and I'm sure OUNC is capturing that as well. We are up to public comment. Sorry?
No, I was just going to say that's how Commonwealth Care Quality both do it. So I know it works, but it is a little different. So I appreciate your listening to the long-winded explanation.
No, appreciate the input. Public comment, please.
Thanks, operator. Can we go online?
If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
Thank you. Do we have any comments in the queue?
No comments at this time.
Okay, John, I'll hand it back to you. If we get any additional comments, I'll let you know.
Thank you. Okay, that leaves us at recommendation 5A, which I'm hopeful may be more straightforward, and I probably just jinxed us. This gets back to our discussion of it's called a broadcast query in here, but actually, yeah, it's called a QHIN broadcast query in TEFCA 2. And just asking, expressing the confusion that we had and making a recommendation. Given the broadcast query described in this draft of TEFCA is not the same as the generally understood industry term, quote unquote, broadcast query. In other words, TEFCA 2 assumes the QHIN or participant will employ a record locator service to avoid large-scale proliferation of queries. We recommend ONC either drop the distinction of targeted query and broadcast query or add explanation of the expected use of an RLS. I don't know that those words are perfect, but I think you see where we're trying to go with that recommendation. Can anybody help improve that?
I mean, David again. I think that describe the functional requirement, but don't use terms like broadcast or record locator at this point because they mix technology and function in ways that will confuse people. So rather than say, you know, directed query and broadcast query, it's a, you know, the ability to go fetch a record from a known location is a one requirement. Another requirement would be, or another functional statement would be, the ability to assemble a federated record from all locations of recent care. And then leave it to the RCE to figure out the technology to achieve those two different purposes. Additional ones that made sense in the long run. That makes sense.
It does. I'm wondering what ONC ends up calling their modalities, but maybe we can work on that. Noam has his hand raised.
Yeah, just that I really, 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 really support what David just said. Anything we can do, anything we can do to remove from the, you know, the test part, and anything that implies particular technical solutions or standards, I think is good. Right? We want to describe what this thing should do, not how it should do it in this part.
And so that comment is completely consistent with the recommendation above as well. So we need to rework 5A to avoid RLS or broadcast, or encourage ONC to avoid such terms, but at the same time communicate the what they functionally want to have happen. And that morphs into the other recommendation to, whenever possible, describe functions, not technical approaches.
Right, and it may be challenging, as you say, to find certain labels for things, because labels and mnemonics give us an easier way to talk about things. It may be a little challenging to find certain labels that don't imply certain technologies, but you got to try. That's all.
Okay, thank you.
And it's quite likely that if the cohort style approach is taken that we discussed earlier, that some of the technologies that are actually mentioned by name in the current document would in fact be in use because they're common and widely deployed. But let that be an RCE decision as opposed to something that is a required MRCT.
And this is Zoe. I just want to make sure that we're sort of clarifying between what we put in the MRTCs and then what's in the QTS. And so is kind of everything that you guys are talking about, does that hold for the technical framework as well?
My opinion would be to minimize the technical framework to maybe not address anything beyond sort of minimum things like security and authorization and, you know, standard for authentication and authorization. Well, all of those are actually requirements, actually, not technical. Minimize the technical details anywhere. Give that to the RCE. Just tell us what the network does.
Yeah, I think that's
tell the RCE what they have to do. You must do the following, support the following use cases or functions.
Yeah, and
clearly use existing technologies because that's the fastest way to get there. But
I'm going to throw out an endorsement for this concept that David is describing, and see if we have general consensus. Noam, that seems consistent with what you were saying earlier.
Right.
And I don't know if anyone else on the task force wants to weigh in, because I feel a stronger recommendation coming on. I'm writing some notes in the margin myself. Okay, hearing no objection. We got just a couple of minutes. We're not going to go, I guess we'll have to pick up with recommendation 6 next time, and we'll have, this is just enough time to describe that our strategy before the call on Thursday is to hopefully turn around another version of this document. ONC team, maybe we can figure out a way to, we'll just put a line in the document of above and below how far we got today. So we got up to, but did not get through recommendation 6. Anything else before we adjourn?
I wanted to ask, John, like as a process question, so we're going to post this in the Google Doc. At this point, do members want to have access to make revisions and put comments in there, or are people, you know, not necessarily going to do that before Thursday's call anyways?
I sort of like us going through this together. I don't know. I mean, it's not that long a document, and I think it may give us a lot to deal with if we have to sort of, you know, be monitoring and commenting potentially on multiple people's comments over a period of time. That's just my own opinion.
I'm inclined to agree with Noam, at least at this stage, and maybe as we get to a more refined document, we can revisit that. But for now, I think I agree with plowing ahead as we are.
I agree too, also.
Okay, thanks for your engagement and input, and we'll talk again on Thursday.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.